Well, that's it with the world news. We're now going live to the Lebanese capital, Beirut, at the International Conference on Palestinian Resistance, where Secretary General of the Lebanese Resistance Movement, Hezbollah, Sayed Hassan Nasr, is addressing the conference.
May peace be upon his family, may peace be upon his friends, may peace be upon all of the prophets and messengers. May peace be upon you all. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I pray to God that we achieve success in this conference and in all of the efforts we pursue. And I pray that we are capable of knowing what our duty is first of all, and to work in accordance with this duty second, and to be committed in what we say and what we do, especially when the issue is that issue which we are gathering to discuss today, or the cause which we fight for. A cause of such clarity, of such great clarity, regarding its righteousness. There is no doubt regarding the righteousness of this cause. It is a clear right. I mean here, of course, the Palestinian cause, the cause of Al-Quds and the fight and the confrontation against the Zionist project. When we talk about, or when we fight for a certain cause, a cause which has religious, humane, legal clarity at all levels, if we look at all of the causes of the world, all of the wars, we would not find any cause or any battle which has such credibility and righteousness and such a clear humane duty like that of Al-Quds. There is no doubt about the righteousness of this cause. Today, there are many confrontations and conflicts and many plots taking place. And we disagree. Where is righteousness? Where is wrong? Sometimes it might be mixed. However, regarding this particular cause, we are looking at complete righteousness. Brothers and sisters, I believe that also the stance towards this cause must also be one of the most important elements of evaluation, where we want to evaluate the stances of countries, the stance and the performance of these countries. When we want to judge certain countries, or when we want to evaluate governments or peoples or political parties or movements or individuals, one of the means with which to evaluate is the stance of those sides towards Palestine and the confrontation against the Zionist project and the Israeli enemy. What their stance is, what their performance is, what their contribution is. This must be a factor along with other considerations, but it must be at the top, one of the main factors when we evaluate countries and governments and peoples and political parties and individuals and political movements. Since before the establishment of the Zionist entity and the occupation of Palestine, this Ummah has been confronting a Zionist project which is working throughout the world. It was working throughout the world, and it is still working throughout the world. And in the aftermath, in 1948, it established a base, an entity called Israel. It is based on the occupation of Palestine. There is no doubt that Israel, the state and the entity, is the base, is the main front in the Zionist project. However, the Zionist project has a more comprehensive presence, a more comprehensive expansion. What I want to stress on at the beginning specifically is that the duty on the shoulders of all is to confront this Zionist project. in all of its forms of expansion, in all of its forms of existence. It took Palestine and Al-Quds. This is the most important form of its expansion. So here, in a brief speech, I don't want to take too much of your time. I will focus on the term of resisting the Zionist project, confronting it, and the aim of confronting this project. The aim of resisting it is to topple this project and to end it and to keep it away permanently from our Ummah and our region. So we are witnessing two projects. We are now up against two projects. The first, the Zionist project of invasion, the project of occupation, the project which wants to seize control, the project which threatens, the corrupt project. And on the other hand, the project of resistance and of confronting this particular project, the Zionist project. This stance is based upon righteousness and law and humanitarian values. In this confrontation, in this perspective, I will speak about two main issues. The first is calling for research and studying, and this conference could be a beginning. We require such an evaluation. The second is regarding what we need to do. So the first is what we need to study and conduct research for. The second is what we should do. Regarding the first main issue, the resistance project has made great achievements over decades, and ever since the first shots were fired in Palestine during the British occupation up until today. However, the last four decades have witnessed developments and achievements and victories which are of greater importance, which are more significant. Briefly speaking, first and foremost comes the toppling of the Zionist project in Lebanon. So if you want to talk about a central Zionist project which has different branches, the Lebanese branch, we've succeeded there. And first and foremost, we had the defeat of the Zionist project in Lebanon and its various repercussions, the direct occupation, and the agents, Lebanese agents that work for Israel, and the Zionist political project to practice hegemony on the country, and also the project of normalization and influence. And we would summarize it in with one term, liberating Lebanon, except for this small geographic area, the Kfar Shuba Hills, the Ghajar, Lebanese part of Ghajar, and the Shaba Farms. Also in Palestine, when we take a look at the achievements, what the Palestinian resistance factions have achieved, the consecutive resistance factions and the consecutive popular intifadas on more than one level, first and foremost, this first and foremost here was the liberation of Gaza from Israeli occupation without any preconditions. Another achievement is what the resistance in Lebanon and also what the resistance in Gaza, the heroic steadfastness they showed in confronting the brutal Israeli wars, which were waged by one of the strongest armies in the world. From the July 2006 war, during these very same days, going to the consecutive wars on Gaza, and the last of those wars on Gaza was the 51-day war in Ramadan last year, last Ramadan. The resistance factions, along with those who were with these factions, those who supported the resistance factions, they were all capable of defeating and preventing the goals of these Israeli wars from being achieved and bring about new equations. Another achievement is returning the Palestinian cause and the conflict with Israel, returning it to the main international, to one of the main issues of international and regional focus, and imposing it on the political agendas of the world's countries. Another achievement is reviving the culture of resistance amongst the people and also enhancing confidence in the choices of resistance by the achievements and by the sacrifices, and also strengthening the sentiment, strengthening the spiritual attachment with the Palestinian cause. It is enough when the leaders of the Zionist project inside the entity and beyond, they have begun to speak for the first time since years, they've begun to speak about the battle for Israel's existence, for Israel's survival. This is something which we have seen very clearly when we had the escalation of the Palestinian in the Intifada of Al-Aqsa, and also the developments we are witnessing, the great developments in the Islamic Republic technologically and in other areas. For this reason, Israel is now talking about a threat to its existence. This is also one of the achievements made by the Project of Resistance. However, over the past few years, and because of the developments taking place in our region and in more than one Arab and Islamic country, let's be realistic. Because of this, real damage has been done to the resistance project and to the countries of this project and the peoples and the movements and the supporters of this project. In addition, the Zionist project also has made achievements. After they had witnessed setbacks and defeats, I'm not saying that the Zionist project is achieving victories, but it is making achievements after this project had reached the stage where it sensed danger for its existence. What we need regarding study and research, first of all, as any sane person would do during a battle or after one round of the confrontation ends, the people of this cause and this battle, they must sit down and list the losses, the damage. This is what we should do. The people of resistance must sit down and say, we, over the past few years, as a result of the regional developments, the resistance project, that is confronting Zionist project, the achievements of this project are clear. And I gave examples. I'm not putting together statistics. I'm not listing them down. But we also must take a look at the damage, the losses which we have suffered. Second, and I'll go back to the examples later on. Number two, we must also take a look at the Israelis over the past few years. What achievements have they made? Of course, some achievements have been made for the Israelis. Without the Israelis making any effort, they didn't pay any price, didn't fire one shot. However, they have made some gains. This also requires us to take a close look, to study. When we talk about statistics and conducting a research, taking a look at the losses and the damage, the reason for this is to repair the damage, to address the problems, to make up for it, or at the very least, to put a limit to this, to put a stop to the losses, to put a stop to the deterioration. And also, when we take a look at the gains made by the enemy, we do this in order to put a stop to these gains, to isolate it, to prevent it, or at the very least, to prevent these gains, to prevent further gains from being made. If we take an example, it's an issue which does require us to study and take a close look. But if we take an example without holding anyone responsible, I'm going to refer to the losses. I don't want to say who's responsible and why did these losses take place. But these results indeed are present, do exist. Number one, the most dangerous is Palestine, and the conflict with the Israeli enemy is now outside the circle of regional and international and Islamic attention. This is something which doesn't require debate. It's clear the whole world is preoccupied elsewhere, and Palestine is somewhere else. But what is really, really sad, and unfortunate is that it hasn't gone outside the circle of attention of the governments and the countries, but also outside the circle of attention of the peoples, because now all the peoples of the region have their problems, have their battles, have their conflicts, and have their catastrophes. So this certainly led to the isolation of the Palestinian people, or a near isolation on the one hand, and on the other hand, it gave a historic opportunity to the government of the enemy to continue with its plans as the world looks elsewhere. At all levels, Judaization, demolishing settlements, displacement of the inhabitants of Al-Quds, displacing Palestinians, and also further strengthening and enhancing the isolation, reaching the level where what Al-Aqsa and the sanctities are being subject to today. And as the colleagues who spoke before me said at the opening, what is taking place today in Al-Aqsa is scary. Today, one of the hakams came up with something new. He said that Jesus Christ, the Messiah, didn't come from the heavens. He said that he will come from the earth. He was asked, who is he? He responded and said that he who destroys Al-Aqsa Mosque is the Messiah. And if Netanyahu does this, then hence Netanyahu is the Messiah. So that's where we have reached. So now Al-Aqsa could be subject to anything amid the focus of the Islamic world and the Islamic people. God only knows what could happen. What took place in Syria, what is still taking place in Syria, the losses being inflicted on the resistance project because of what Syria represents as a central position in this project and this axis. Iraq, after liberation, after the American army withdrawal, and also Yemen, they are two promising and great opportunities in the resistance project. They are still as such. They are still two promising opportunities. However, they are being subject to wars, destructive wars, and also more fragmentation in the Arab and Islamic world, officially and non-officially, at the official level and the non-official level, and also promoting enmity with the Islamic Republic of Iran, although Iran clearly represents the main and most significant supporter of the Ummah in confronting the Zionist project. There is no doubt that what is taking place in Egypt, Libya, Tunisia, Bahrain, and other countries, this all has an impact in a certain way. However, what is more dangerous than all of this, from my perspective, is the psychological impact which they are working on. They are trying to deepen this impact in our people against anything which is Palestinian in some communities. This doesn't require examples. On more than one occasion, this issue was referred to. On the other hand, and this is more dangerous, sensing relief and easily dealing with and communicating with the Israelis and breaking down the psychological barrier with the Israelis. Today in the region, when you can speak with the Israelis, get support from the Israelis, get weapons, money, our wounded can be treated over there, this has become something normal. Previously, this issue, there were many calculations done before this would take place. Today, these barriers and walls are breaking down. And so, one of the achievements of the Israelis is that they are taking advantage of the regional conflicts in order to infiltrate, not to the governments, but infiltrate into the peoples as part of the normalization. This project of normalization never stopped. The resistance of normalization stopped, but the project of normalization, political normalization, cultural, economic, trade normalization, participating in conferences, this never stopped. Now, maybe we're not watching it because we're all preoccupied elsewhere. However, what stopped was resisting the normalization. Now, we must also study once again and reevaluate the strong elements of the resistance project. When I speak about these losses, that doesn't mean that the project of resistance is weak. No, I'm using the project of resistance in order to make it look bigger than the axis of resistance, because the axis of resistance is specified in one country or that country, this side or that side. So I want to speak more comprehensively. We have very strong elements, and the Israelis calculate a lot. They make a lot of calculations regarding this issue. All of these preparations, these maneuvers, the drills, even the drills conducted over the past few days, the urgent calls for the reserves, the Israeli army reserves. No, the Israelis know that they are confronting a real power in the region, despite all of the losses, despite all the painful events which I am talking about. We must also search for new strengths throughout the world, search for these strengths in the world as a whole. I think that the resistance people, the resistance movements, I don't think we have done enough. In Latin America, we have also promising opportunities. In Asia, even in Europe, at the political level, at the media level, at various levels. And this is a confrontation, a battle which must be waged at all levels. And also regarding re-evaluating and learning lessons of the past, we must also evaluate the following. Who should we rely on? Who supports us? Who supports the resistance project indeed? Who really supports it and continues with this support? And who sells us out? And who sells us out at the very first opportunity? This is also part of the evaluation, because he who is heading to a battle of such a scale of confronting Israel and the Zionist project, he must have a strong supporter, a strong support base. Not have the supporter of someone who sells him out at the first opportunity in order not to repeat failed experiences. The second main issue is regarding what we should do, the action which we should take. First of all, and I think that the ulama of resistance, the Ittihadi ulama of resistance, they have a responsibility to work on the ideology of this battle, of this conflict, meaning this issue is above politics, it's above nationalism, it's above interests, it's above sects and racial groups and ethnicities, it's above parties and movements and specific regions. This issue is of a higher level. When I speak about an ideological cause, I'm not saying it's only Islamic. It's one of the firmest norms for the Ummah and for its parties, for its intellectuals, to stress on the ideological nature of this confrontation. As a result, what can we achieve? One of the most important results of this is that when we disagree on political issues, politically inside the country or beyond or in the Ummah, when we disagree, as is the case today, when we disagree regarding evaluating the events in the region, as is the case today, because today we do disagree regarding the evaluation of the events and understanding them, yes, we do, objectively speaking, we do disagree. However, when we have a cause and a battle which is above politics and above interests and above all of these considerations, this cause will remain the central issue of firm unity, which brings us together and unifies our efforts towards this certain direction. Although our efforts might not be unified in other issues, this is the importance of focusing and promoting the ideological nature of the conflict with the Israeli entity and liberating Palestine al-Quds. The intellectual efforts by the ulama is very important in this regard. Also, the ideological nature of this cause allows us, helps us to fortify ourselves. I spoke before about one of the dangers, one of the biggest dangers being the psychological issue. I didn't explain it. I'll go back to it later on. But the thing is that what is said is what do we have to do with Palestine? We are concerned with our own country, our own catastrophes, and our own crises. So what do we have to do with Palestine? Now, actually, this Ummah has gone down. At the beginning, Palestine was the battle of the Ummah, the responsibility of the Ummah, the duty of the Ummah. The Ummah as a whole should fight and take up arms and enter into Palestinian territories and not recognize borders. And never was any individual in this Ummah, when he wanted to fight in Palestine, never did he need a justification or excuses or to defend himself, etc., etc. Then we went down a level because there were national entities and national interests. Then we started to say that Palestine is a responsibility of the Palestinian people. We all say that. We say Palestine is the responsibility of the Palestinian people, and our responsibility is to support the Palestinian people, to stand with the Palestinian people. That is a concession. However, unfortunately now, at the level of the Ummah, we've reached a stage whereby Palestine is the responsibility of the Palestinian people and we have nothing to do with it. We cannot support, we cannot help. Let everyone solve his own problems. That is a catastrophe in this confrontation. This is a psychological issue. It is a cultural issue. When we focus on the ideological nature of this battle and that it comes above the political interests, the national interests, the regions and the sects, then our responsibility towards Palestine and Al-Quds and confronting the Zionist project, our ideological and our responsibility in general and the way it reflects on our actions will be different. And here, within this perspective, I call on all the religious scholars and all those concerned with this cause, I call on all of them to really indeed and far away from any considerations, I call on them to adopt the call made by Imam Khomeini, may peace be upon his soul, regarding the last Friday of Ramadan being International Al-Quds Day. This stresses and further promotes the ideological nature of Al-Quds and the confrontation with the Israeli enemy. So for this reason, despite all of the catastrophes, we saw the protests in many countries throughout the world on International Al-Quds Day. If these people who went down to the streets on International Al-Quds Day, if they wanted to behave according to their mood, their psychological mood, the mood that exists in the region, if that was the case, nobody should have went down for Al-Quds. However, they went down to the streets because there is an ideological affiliation with Al-Quds, not because of a political affiliation or an interest affiliation. So first of all, to stress on the ideological nature of this, and of course your ulama, the religious scholars, will speak about this matter. Second, it is necessary to exert all possible efforts to put an end to the wars and stop the seditions and find political solutions to the current conflicts taking place in more than one country. Number three, reviving the efforts to confront all forms of normalization with Israel. Today, okay, we cannot open military fronts because now it's different than the case is different than it was before. Today, the battle in Gaza, the battle in Lebanon, of course, the situation is different than it was in the previous years after the wars. However, countering normalization in the Arab and Islamic world, where have we reached? These efforts have either ended or they're frozen. At the same time, normalization is continuing. So we must search, how can we revive the resisting of normalization once again? We don't need to explain to one another the dangers of normalization with the Israeli enemy, the dangers of this regarding the confrontation with the enemy and Palestine. Number four is to establish at this specific time, we are in need of a media and political campaign, an expansive campaign. This requires a plan. It requires great efforts to remind people about three main points. First of all, to remind the people of the region, Muslims and Christians, and also to remind our Ummah of the true nature of this enemy, the Israeli enemy. Its true nature, its barbarity, its brutality, its terrorism, the massacres committed by this enemy, because it seems that there are some who quickly forgot, and there are others who, because of the new images they are seeing in the region, they're trying to make inappropriate comparisons. What is striking our region today, the takfir terrorism, is very dangerous. However, the Israeli terrorism is still above anything, everything which anyone could think of, the massacres, the slaughtering, the killing, the genocide, or at the very least, maybe it's similar. However, to ignore and turn the blind eye to the true nature of this enemy, and then to present this enemy as a friend or a guarantee for some of the peoples in the region, this requires also counter efforts. So first of all, to remind of the true nature of this enemy, its brutality, its barbarity, and its massacres and its terrorism. And second, to remind the governments and the peoples of the region, and if the governments aren't listening, and they haven't been listening for a long time, to remind the people at the very least that this entity is a beast on Palestinian territories that poses a threat to the whole region, the security and peace of the region, the stability, the interest and the riches and the future of the region, and that the ambitions of the enemy have never ended, and that this threat is continuing, because unfortunately some have taken Israel out of the circle of dangers. Today there are some Arab countries, if they come, and assuming that they do this, because usually countries from time to time they take a look at their strategy and their ideology and their national security and the opportunities and their threats. Assuming these Arab countries make such an assessment, some of these Arab countries have taken Israel out of the circle of threats. Now, that's not something which we should be surprised or is strange to some governments, but what I know is that regarding some popular movements, they have taken Israel outside the circle of dangers. This is something very dangerous in the in this confrontation. Number three, reminding the world and the Ummah and the peoples of the Ummah of the sufferings of the Palestinian people and the massacres committed against the people and what the Palestinian people are still suffering today, every hour, every day. This also must be present in all of our media outlets, in our language, in our speech, what the Israel regime also committed in Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, Egypt, what they committed in July 2006, the massacres they committed. This is something which must not be forgotten. This must always be under the spotlight to once again focus on the nature of the enemy which poses the threat. Number five, to find a framework and take advantage of all the capabilities in the world to support the resistance project far away from any religious or racial or ethnic considerations. Number six, and this is the last main point before I reach the conclusion. Number six, this confrontation to all religious scholars, to all the brothers and sisters, this requires great commitment. I'm speaking here psychologically. It also requires us to rise above interests, to rise above certain sensitivities, to rise above considerations, be it political party considerations or faction considerations or religious sects or individual considerations. We are now talking about a confrontation whereby great sacrifices were made by armies, by resistance. This resistance project sacrificed its most valuable, sacrificed a lot, its youth. The peoples of this region, indeed, I say, the people, what was absent, what the people lacked was not a sacrifice, the source of sacrifice. The people lacked a unified leadership which brings together the energies and efforts of the Ummah. If that had happened, Palestine would have been liberated a long time ago. We require what the sacrifices of the army and resistance are worthy of. Anyone, one way to reflect this commitment, anyone who raises this flag and steps forward, we must go along and march ahead with him, regardless if he's an Arab or a Persian, or what's his religion, where does he come from which country, whoever he may be. He who raises the flag and steps forward on the front lines to retrieve Palestine and retrieve Al-Quds and to push the Zionist project away from this Ummah, he who does this, we must support him and we must stand with him and we must walk together with him. And we must put everything else aside, all other sensitivities and considerations aside. This is one way of commitment, if we are indeed committed to Al-Quds and Palestine, the people of Palestine, and to the confrontation of this project. If Iran steps forward, if Egypt steps forward, we must be with it. If Iran steps forward, we must also stand with it. And if Syria steps forward, we must stand with Syria. If any Arab or Islamic country, if Indonesia comes from far off, from far away, and says, I, Indonesia, with my politics and diplomacy, with my capabilities, with my financial resources, and if it requires, with my people and weapons, if it says, I want to assume this responsibility, then we must all become Indonesians. This is what it means to be committed. We must not stop and say, they are Indonesians, we are Arabs, or Shia, or Sunnis, or Christians, or Muslims. However, in this matter, in this specific point, the problem is that some don't support and they also prevent others from supporting. When the supporter becomes he who is condemned, when he becomes the accused, and when he who is supported is condemned and accused, some resistance movements, when they receive real support from a certain country, because of certain sensitivity and problems with this country, these resistance movements then are accused. They're not only accused regarding their political stance, they are even accused regarding their religion, in their religion and in their religious sect. Meaning, I'm going to speak frankly here, if a Sunni resistance movement receives support from the Islamic Republic of Iran, it's not accused of its political stance, it's accused of being Shia, of converting to Shiism. There's a clear example here. You don't want to solve the problem, nor do you want us to solve the problem ourselves. That's a saying we have. So go ahead. I'm addressing here all the Arabs, the kings, the leaders in the Arab and Islamic world. Let any Arab or Islamic country step forward and take responsibility. And I'm one of those people, and many who are in this hall today, we guarantee to you then that Iran would step back, would step to the back lines. It would thank you, it would be happy. Because Iran, in this battle, it is taking great burdens and dangerous burdens. And because of this confrontation, it is confronting great threats. And a lot of national interests are being lost for Iran. So if any Arab or Islamic country would come and say, I step forward, we are all with this Arab or Islamic country, and we would set everything aside. We would not stop on any certain matter, we would set all considerations aside. We require this commitment. This commitment is something which we are in need of. The last main issue which I would like to point out to before I end the speech is, and it also requires us to stop and focus on in this conference and also after the conference, one of the major problems which really inflict harm and is related to this conflict is what has begun to be drawn in the conscience and the minds of large segments of this region, of the populations of this region. Without making any introduction, today, as a result of the crimes being committed in the name of Islam, and these crimes are being committed by takfiri groups, crimes against all the inhabitants of the region, Sunni, Shia, Muslims, Christians, from different religious sects, from different religions, from different Islamic sects, they are being subject today to such crimes. But there is something which is special regarding the minorities, something unique regarding the non-Muslim religious communities. And also, we must focus on the Islamic sects who are not from the main four sects, the non-Sunnis. And when we count them, the remaining Islamic sects, amongst them we have the Shia. Now, these population segments in the region, in order for me not to remind you of them, what I mean is the non-Muslims and the Muslim non-Muslims who are not Sunnis. The battle being waged under the takfiri slogan, the crimes being committed, the religious language of this group, what is it? It is saying that my disagreement with you is not political. I am killing you because you are members and affiliated with this religion if you're not Muslims, and they say I'm killing you because you belong to this sect if they're not Sunnis, and if they are Sunnis they say I'm killing you because you belong to this specific ideology or this specific sect. However, let's put the Sunnis aside to focus on these groups. Now, where does this lead us to? And it is leading us, indeed. The killings taking place now, the killings of these group, for these groups, it's clear. This is the truth. They're killing based upon religious affiliation, religious sect affiliation, not based upon politics or a political confrontation or a political project. Where is this leading us to? It's leading these groups to being convinced, to a conviction that we are being subject to an existential battle. And this is unprecedented in the region. This stresses that this region, which has been living under Islam for 1,400 years, this shows very clearly that what is taking place has nothing to do with Islam or the Salaf al-Saleh or all of this long Islamic history. When any specific sect or group senses that its existence is in danger, its men, its women, the children, not just its sanctities and its mosques or churches or schools, no, the very existence, the human existence, when they sense that this existence is in danger, it's their right, it's their natural right, it's their religious right to defend themselves, to defend their existence. There's no debate in this regard. Now, when these groups, when they defend their existence, the first side to go out of the circle of conflict is Israel, because then the priority would become defending the existence. When you tell these groups, when you speak to them about Israel, they would respond by saying Israel is a future danger, a danger which is delayed. Now I must confront the real danger. So the main priority would become these takfiris, and then psychologically and culturally things could further develop, and then Israel would no longer be an enemy, Palestine would no longer be a subject of focus, not just a priority, but no longer a subject of focus and responsibility, and then things could further develop to the level, and I really hope that you can consider this as a real danger, the Israelis are working on it. Things could reach the stage then whereby some religious groups or certain Islamic sects, they could reach the stage whereby they could view Israel, the enemy, as a protectorate, a defender, guarantee a safety. This is the most dangerous thing the resistance project is facing in the region. Now, this applies to the members of certain religions and certain sects. The Israelis have begun to present themselves as such, as a protectorate, as a power that could intervene to defend this sect or that sect. They've even reached the stage, when I read this, there is a certain story which says that the mercy of God on Judgment Day expands, whereby the neck of the devil also is there. Believe that the neck of the devil, Israel, I've read this. Some Israeli experts say we expect or we hope the day comes whereby even our biggest enemies in Lebanon will extend the hand of friendship, and they even name Hezbollah, these Israeli experts. So we, at the very least, Hezbollah, of course, the Lebanese resistance is a lot older than us. For 33 years, there has been an ideological and jihadi and bloody confrontation between us and the Israelis. We consider the Israelis as one of the biggest enemies of this world, and we are ready in our culture, in our own mindset, we are ready to die without any food and medicine. We are ready for our bones to be crushed without extending our hand to request help from Israel. But despite this, Israel looks forward to the day where it expects the enemies to extend the hand of friendship. What made Israel expect this? The events of the region. Here, there is a responsibility on the shoulders of the religious scholars of these religions and these sects, the Christian religious scholars, the scholars of the Shia, the Druze, the Ismailis, the Ayyazidis. And we also have the problem today in Algeria. The ulama, the religious scholars and the intellectuals who are speaking to their peoples, they are called upon, and they must say, beware. It's true that we are confronting such dangers. However, this way of thinking, such sentiments are wrong. They are against our religion and our ideology and our culture. On International Al-Quds Day two years ago, I usually don't use the term Sunni and Shia. However, I said on that day 2 years ago, I said this not because of, it wasn't based on sectarianism. When I spoke about the Shia of Ali ibn Abi Talib, may peace be upon him, I didn't explain it back then, but today I explain. There are Western and international efforts and media efforts being pursued inside the region and beyond, efforts being pursued to keep the Shia away, to push the Shia away from the confrontation with Israel. This is a goal. It's no coincidence. And what is taking place, what they are being subject to, on each person, they are trying to use it in a certain way. What has been taking place for years in more than one country is deliberate. It's a plan. The aim is to push the Shia away from Palestine, away from the Palestinian people, away from Al-Quds, and from the confrontation with the Israeli enemy, and to even convince the Shia later on that what really poses an existential threat to you are the Sunnis, not the Takfiris, the Sunnis, and that the commonalities in the confrontation are more, the commonalities with Israel are more in this existential battle. And I'm not hiding and saying that this has fallen on deaf ears. No, some Shi'is and some Christians and some Druze, they are indeed listening. Some of them maybe are being convinced. So for this reason, I said that back then on International Al-Quds Day, I say it once more. And I am in ongoing contact with all of the religious scholars, and I know how our ulama, how they think, the Sayyid al-Qaid in Iran. Once again, I repeat and I say, whatever be the events, whatever be the pains and the sufferings taking place here, as Shia and as non-Shia, we must all think in the following way. I said that we, the Shia of Ali ibn Abi Talib, may peace be upon him, we will not abandon Palestine, nor the people of Palestine, nor the sanctities of the Ummah in Palestine. That is not just a stance, not any stance. It is a religious stance, an ideological stance. On International Al-Quds Day, one of the images which really touched me, and this bears witness to the ideological subject that I mentioned before. I understand that in many countries of the world, people go down and protest and they celebrate International Al-Quds Day. But in Nubul and al-Zahra, in Syria, in Aleppo, Nubul and Zahra, the two besieged villages that have been besieged for 2 years, two villages that are being subject to bombings on a daily basis and attacks, and some of the women also continue to suffer on Al-Quds Day. They protest, they carry the flags of Palestine, and they carry the symbol of Al-Quds. They celebrate Al-Quds Day, and they are, at the time they are besieged in Nubul and Zahra, they talk about Al-Quds and going to Al-Aqsa and praying in Al-Aqsa Mosque. This comes out only ideologically. There is only an ideological reason to do this. But if we speak about non-ideological matters, that shouldn't be their priority. So we have a great responsibility. We must not allow this ideological and psychological and even this moral deterioration to take place as a result of the events being witnessed in our region. Our brothers, the Sunnah religious clerics, they also have a great responsibility. Up until now, many of the courageous stances that have been taken over the years in this conference, on many different occasions, the courageous stances which condemned the takfiris and the crimes, these are not the efforts of an individual. These are efforts, and this is service done to the Ummah, not just to individual, a service done to the project of the Ummah. And these efforts must continue, because those takfiris must be isolated. The Sunnis, because they are the majority of the Ummah, they are called upon to assume more responsibility. They are called upon to reassure the members of the other religions, and to also to reassure the members of the other Islamic sects, more than they should call on the other sects to reassure them. The nature of the region means that there is such a responsibility. How do we do this? This requires us to focus and exert great efforts. I believe that the International Union for the Resistance, for the religious scholars of the resistance, under the leadership of Sheikh Maher Hammoud and his colleagues, the religious scholars, and as a religious gathering, they could indeed take a great initiative and be a major partner along with the resistance factions to correct and to reinvigorate, to correct everything and to rebuild everything that needs to be rebuilt in order for the resistance project to achieve the victory in the end, which will come, God willing. We believe with certainty that Israel, the tumorous cancer, will end, will be annihilated, and that Palestine al-Quds will be returned to their rightful owners. It's a matter of time only, and it's related to the will and the efforts and the sacrifices of this ummah, based upon the equation that if you achieve victory for the cause of God, God will enable you to achieve victory. And I believe that despite all of the sufferings, that we will achieve victory and success, and that because of our vigilance and steadfastness, I believe that our ummah will be able to overcome this difficulty and this difficult phase, and I hope and I believe we will come out of it stronger and more determined, and then we will settle our scores with the mother of corruption, Israel. The day whereby we will all pray in Al-Quds, this day is coming, no doubt, inshallah, God willing. And all of these sufferings and catastrophes and these conspiracies, they show the fundamental nature. They show all of the believers the true nature of this project in order for the believers to be worthy of the future victory, because some could achieve victory and waste this victory. God wants our ummah in the final victory against the Zionist project and in retrieving Palestine and Al-Quds. God wants our ummah to be worthy of this historic victory, and also to be worthy of preserving this victory and not wasting it, just like many other victories have been wasted. I apologize for taking too much of your time. May God bless you, and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
International Conference on Palestinian Resistance taking place in the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Secretary General of the Lebanese Resistance Movement, Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, was addressing the conference. In his opening statements, he said that there is no cause as credible and righteous as the cause of Al-Quds. He stated that we evaluate the performance of countries, people, and governments with regards to their stance on the cause of Palestine and Al-Quds. Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah also added that there's no doubt that Israel is the front for what he described as the Zionist project, and confronting the Zionist project, in his words, is the duty of everyone. Toppling the Zionist project in Lebanon, he said, was a great achievement for the resistance project, adding that the liberation of Gaza was also another achievement for the project of resistance against the Zionist entity. Zionist project, he stated, is benefiting from turmoil in the region, and he also added that Iran represents the main support for the Ummah in the anti-Zionist project, and Iran is enduring great burdens and is confronting great threats in this regard. Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah also added that the Ummah is responsible to work on the ideology of anti-Zionist struggle, and the intellectual efforts by the ulama is very important in this regard as well. He said that we currently say Palestine, the cause of Palestine, is an issue for Palestinian people, which he believes using it in that terminology is a catastrophe. And he also stated that we need media and a media political campaign to reveal the true nature of the Zionist enemy. He stated in his closing comments, Israel's crimes and massacres should not be forgotten. And on the issue of the Takfiri terrorists, he stated that Takfiri crimes target all people in the region, regardless of religion and ethnicity, and that Israel will reach its end and Al-Quds will be fully liberated. Those were the comments made by Secretary General of the Lebanese Resistance Movement, Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, was addressing the conference of International Conference on Palestinian Resistance in the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Do stay with us. We'll be back on the top of the hour here on Press TV with our news and brief. Bye.